Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, good evening, and welcome to the one and only Murder 123. This is Dr. John Stamey, and I'll tell you what. We've got a big, big show tonight for a number of reasons. We've got a lot of great announcements. All those to be present are here. And tonight, of course, we're going to be discussing our dossier was on Richard Speck. And we also have a couple of guests coming on. They should be on in just a few minutes. But what I wanted to do is I wanted to announce that next month, all four of the Scary Cast programs, which is Murder 123, The Charlotte Line, Pop Culture Star, and of course Scary Cast, will be on two new internet radio channels, one being revradio.org, which is classical music and the Civil and the Revolutionary War, and it will be on sprucepine.org up in the beautiful mountains of North Carolina. And I'm pleased to say that as of today, Scarycast Network, which includes Murder 123, Charlotte Line, Pop Culture Stars, and Scarycast, is now part of the entertainment and film giant nonprofit Eno River Media in Raleigh, North Carolina. We just did that today, so we're working with them on a number of things. And I know, Papa Stro, you're on one of the boards. I've been on the board too, and we all think, in fact, we're going to have, not this week, but next week, we are going to have Anthony P. Dowling, executive director of Eno Media, Eno River Media, on, and we're going to have a great time hanging out. He always loves to be on the show, so we're going to put him on Scary Cast so that all of us can be here, and it'll be great. So anyway, we got that going, and I think our guests are coming on, and I'll introduce them first. Are our guests on the air with us right now?
Yes, we are.
Hey, we have got tonight two very cool people. Very cool people. We've got Chaz Moretti and his wife, Amy. Hello, from Chicago. How you doing tonight?
We're doing good.
Well, that's great.
Chaz,
how
you glad guys out there?
You. Everybody's buddy
Chaz
just said hello
Amy.
To you, Chaz.
Hi.
Love you guys. Wait, let me get you off the speaker. Hold on a second.
Yep.
That
was Papa Stro.
That echo is, the echo was me, by the way.
Is that better?
That's okay. We're glad to have so many friends. You know, this is great. We got so many friends on tonight. It's not even funny. For such a dire, dire podcast about Richard Speck. Anyway, I want to introduce my friend,
only the best,
my
right
co-host
on Murder 123.
Who was? What did you say? What'd you say? Did
only
I miss
the
something?
Best right here on 123. There goes my echo.
That's
again.
Exactly. That's only the best on Murder 123. And Devin had to work late, so he gets a hall pass. But as the dude that was talking right there, Murder 123's own Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling. How are you doing tonight, buddy?
Doing great. Getting things cranking. It's good to see more things opening back up in the world, and hopefully we can keep making steps in a more positive direction. So,
well, I hope we can. Now, by the way, Pop, I need to ask you something, because I saw a promo. You are going to be in Wilmington, correct? Coming up sometime soon with UPWA?
Here's the thing with that. The promoter there is trying to run a show in Wilmington in July, which, I've got it penciled in, but I'm just kind of waiting to see how things go.
Because of coronavirus, yeah.
Yeah, my schedule is a lot like everybody else's. It's more or less a wait and see thing, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because the events have been canceled and postponed left and right as of late with everything that's going on. So, but as far as I know, things are still a go. But I'm keeping an eye on it just in case something were to happen. That's not the thing.
Right.
So just kind of played it by ear.
Exactly. I just happened to see that just came flying by today. on Facebook, so I just thought I'd mention that. And so anyway, that's great and awesome. It's awesome to have you here. And now comes the fun part. The queen of Murder 123, the one, the only, Robin McCray. How are you doing tonight, Robin?
I'm great. I'm glad to be here. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, it's going to be a blast. I tell you, it is. So we're glad you're here. And then, of course, we have from the murder capital of the universe. You have officially been named that, Tony. Tony Pelosi from Harlan, Kentucky. How you doing?
Yay, Tony.
Yay. I'm doing great, John. How's everybody else doing?
Good.
All right.
By the way, John, you forgot to mention my other events that I do have going on. I do more than just wrestling, you know.
I know that, and I was going to announce the Lizard Man Festival, which is coming this weekend, and I was going to tell everybody.
Hallelujah.
Oh, no, I've got two more announcements, and those have to do with you. I'm going to go, that's my cue to get started. Number one, this weekend, the third annual Lizard Man Festival. Thank goodness we made it to the third year. That means we can't get to the fourth year without the third year. And Papa Stro is leading us off on Saturday. He's going to be doing a Q&A on his illustrious career. That's going to be at noon. Now, I'm going to go in reverse. Friday night at midnight, which means 11:59:59, Friday, Papa Stro is going to be doing the Stro Zone, which he takes an infamous horror film and introduces it properly, the way a scary Papa Stro should. Papa Stro, tell us about that. What have you picked for Friday night?
Well, the Stro Zone, this Friday night at midnight Eastern Standard Time, part of the Lizard Man Festival 2020 online event. The feature will be the giant Gila monster. So you definitely don't want to miss that. And
But he looks like Lizard Man, too.
A really, really, really big version of Lizard Man. Huge.
That's right.
Ginormous.
I remember that now. He is gigantic. Yeah. He's bigger than that Lizard
Man.
It's
scary. And I also like to plug, if you don't mind, to, of course, the podcast, In the Room, tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, VOCNation.com, and WCW Retro this Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, prior to Scary Cast, this Thursday night.
And this Thursday night, special time, mm-hmm. special guest, this Thursday night, 11 p.m., Brady Hicks, Ghost Hunter.
Ta-da! Nice. There we go.
What more can we say? Brady Hicks, Ghost Hunter, 11 p.m. Now, Robin, I'll probably be hanging out with you and Janice and Pat and the crew. So as long as I know we do 10:30 because it helps you, but this is special. We got to get Stro off WCW Retro and get Brady there. So we're going to have the coolest show. He sent me 15 pictures. And I put five of them up, and we'll have more. And it's going to be great. And
Brady's a big fan of Krampus, by the way. Big fan of Krampus.
Oh, good. Then he can come co-star. If he can get his butt down here from New Jersey, then he can co-star with the next Krampus Festival, Papa Stro. I think that'd
and
be great.
And little shameless plug. If you want to support VOCNation.com on all our great podcasting, please go to ProWrestlingTees.com and buy our T-shirts. They're on sale at ProWrestlingTees.com. Just type in VOC Nation in the ProWrestlingTees.com search, and you'll see all the shirts on sale. All the proceeds will help the network.
Absolutely. That's a great thing to do. Did I hear my name?
Just to let you know. Yep, just to let you know, Amy's called in on her own line, so you got a caller waiting. That's Amy.
Oh, okay. Well, look, thank you very much. I heard. I got to bring her on. I heard her talking with you, and now we'll get Amy. Amy, are you there?
I'm here.
Good. I heard you talking with Chaz. Good. We're glad you're here.
We didn't want to put his phone on speaker, so we figured that I'll call on my phone.
That is great.
Awesome.
Okay.
Well, we're glad you're here.
Yes.
Thank you.
And we've introduced everybody, and I'm Dr. John, and I'm in charge of this. Is a party tonight, and this is the most fun. Oh, Papa Stro, since we're doing plugs, please plug your show, your show on that you're the star of.
Oh, the
produced
series.
By Ronald
the
Ross.
Series. Yeah, the
yes.
Dust series. You can watch the Dust series. They're all uploading all three seasons of the Dust series now on the Veil TV. You're watching the Veil TV at availfilms.com. That's availfilms.com altogether. They're syndicated to Roku, Apple TV, and Amazon Fire TV. So check us out, and we're going to be on set later on this year to film season 4, which I'm really excited about. So, but yeah, in the meantime, just you can binge watch and check out Dust series and Avail TV. It's awesome. Thank you for your support.
That's
by
right.
The way.
Well, it's awesome because Papa Stro is the star. That's why it's awesome. But anyway, now let's get down to the murders at hand tonight. Richard Benjamin Speck. This is not a sad story. This is a sad story. It's not cool. And now, Amy, you haven't been with us before, but if you hear, here's the deal. If you hear something that interests you and you want to say something, you just yell, stop, and then we'll give you the floor. That's how we do it. If we have something
hammer
we want to say, we start. It's hammer time. That's exactly right. Okay, here we go. The biography or the dossier of Richard Speck for Murder 123. Speck was born in Illinois. And he was the seventh of eight children, and he was born in December 4th, 1941. And now, by the way, and I just realized this, he passed away on December 5th, which means he passed away on International Krampus Day. Top Stro, how's that?
Wonderful. You hear that, Brady?
That's right. So we'll have to. Actually, he was born on December 6th. So at midnight, we'll sing happy birthday to him. Anyway, let's see. Where were we? He was really an active, not so good dude. He did over 40 minor to relatively serious crimes. He killed 9 women, along with rape and torture. Now, believe it or not, killed 9, not just 8. We've got another one in here that he killed shortly before that. He admitted to killing this other person. So in one sentence, he was in and out of jail most of his life on crimes that included forgery, robbery, assault, and things. And then came a terrible night in 1966. So now, how did this all begin? His crime career began in Dallas. He had just moved back there from Illinois. He had stayed there to complete second grade. So he came on down to Dallas where he could be with his mother, who was a big Bible-toting lady, very stern, very not a lot of fun, and his stepfather, who was hard-drinking, life insurance salesman, and I mean, what a recipe for disaster. His name was Carl. He had a 25-year criminal record that started with forgery,
yeah.
And it included several arrests for drunk driving. Carl verbally abused and threatened, you know, poor little Richard. And, you know, when he was living
Richard.
With poor little Richard. Well, I mean, I feel sorry for him. You know, nobody's dad. I would doubt if anybody's dad within earshot of here threatened them and told them they were going to beat him up and everything. Just, you know, good parents, not even great parents, just good parents don't do that. And I think that's pretty horrible. So in school, Richard was a terrible student. He needed glasses to read, but he refused to wear them, and he struggled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much. And he struggled throughout his school time in Dallas through the 4th to the 8th grade. He repeated the 8th grade. And then in autumn of 57, he started the 9th grade at Crozier Technical High School. But he failed every subject and did not return for the spring semester in January of 58 because he had just turned 16. And so that was it for school.
So much for being teacher's pet.
Yeah, they didn't, they didn't like him. They didn't like him. Unlike some other kids that, that they liked. And we've talked about that. But it's, by the time he was 15, right, while he was just still in school, he was getting drunk almost every day. And his first arrest came for trespassing, where he was drunk. It was followed by dozens of other arrests for misdemeanors over the next 8 years, car theft and burglary. And he had a lot of short jail sentences. And so it prompted him to move to Chicago because he had stolen
a car. He'd be a movie star today.
Well, I know. I mean, because what happened was he stole a car. He broke into he robbed a convenience store and stole 70 cartons of cigarettes. He went around to a department store parking lot and he sold all the cigarettes out of the back of that stolen car, and then just ran away. Just left the car there. I mean, gee. I mean, how much more awful can it get? So anyway, with auto theft and burglary, in 1988, he would have done some hard time in Texas. So his sister drove him back to Chicago.
Nowadays, he has his own merchandise. He's selling merchandise today.
I mean, he'd go in one of those beaten-up stores in Minneapolis or Chicago, and he would have opened up. And they'd have said, glad to have
you. T-shirt and everything.
Yep. So anyway, he goes up to Chicago, and that was in January. So in April, he was burglaring a house in Monmouth, Illinois. The lady, Mrs. Virgil Harris, who was 65 years old, she came home at 1 a.m. and walked in on him burgling, and he had a knife. Now, he was 6 feet tall. He was a white man, but she said he was very white and spoke very softly and with a southern drawl. He blindfolded her. Tied her up, raped her, ransacked the house, and stole the $2.50 she had earned from babysitting that evening. She was probably more upset about the house being ransacked than anything else, no doubt. But maybe not. That was just a little attempt at humor. But it's terrible. He stole her money, stole her jewelry, stole everything, and raped her and left her tied up in a messed up house. Now, the next week, he met a lady, Mary Catherine Pierce, and he drank with her at one of his favorite hangouts. And so he had been with her earlier that evening, and she worked at a tavern. It was her brother-in-law. It was called Frank's Place in downtown Monmouth. And she was last seen leaving Frank's Tavern at about 12:30 p.m. on April the 9th. She was reported missing 4 days later. Well, I hope if one of y'all doesn't hear from me in a day, somebody's going to report me missing. And so anyway, her body was found later that day on April the 13th in an empty hog slaughterhouse behind the tavern. She had died from a blow to her abdomen, punctured her liver. So, I mean, that was
I was craving barbecue until I heard this, though. I'm glad.
Yeah,
that's
just very sad.
It is. It really is.
It really is, and we just don't. And we just, we just feel for people that do that. So anyway, over the next days, he bounced back and forth because he was in Chicago, and there was a pretty big shipping trade, and so he was always trying to get a job with merchant fleet and everything like that. So. Anyway, he never could get a job. So what happened was one day, he got very, very, very drunk. And he molested a lady, stole her knife. She had a knife to protect her in her pocketbook. He stole the knife. He pulled a black mask, we would call them toboggans down here in the South, a black thing to cover his face, And so he was living actually almost right next to a townhouse in Chicago where some nurse students were staying. There were eight of them there, plus one of them had a guest. So there were nine ladies. He used that knife to slide in, and he killed the following girls: Gloria, Patricia, Nina Jo, Pamela, Suzanne, Mary Ann, Merlita, and Valentine. Valentine Passion was her name. Now, in trial, he claimed he was drunk and high on drugs, and that may have really, because he'd really only planned to commit a robbery. Now, come on. But anyway, he held each of the women in a room for hours, individually leading them out one by one, raping and then stabbing or strangling each one to death. And then the last one, he actually raped and strangled her first. So that was terrible.
How did he take turns killing these ladies one by one like that? I don't understand.
Yeah,
that doesn't make
any
sense.
He had them tied up in one room.
He tied them all up. So one hiding under the bed that he did.
Yeah.
I was going to say, these ladies wouldn't be like an assembly line waiting to get murdered one by one. I mean,
yeah.
He had them all tied up.
Yep.
Yeah.
And,
I was getting ready to say, like, yeah, wait a minute
here. And then, you know,
the one
he forgot.
The one under the bed is under the finger then.
Yeah, right, because he slid under the bed, and the documentary that I was looking at said, you know, it's possible that he just lost count because he knew women lived in the house, and he probably wasn't aware that the ninth girl was spending the night, and she had slid under the bed, and she stayed there until about 6 a.m. Now, that must have been the most horrible thing in the world. So, in any way...
That's crazy. Wow.
Yeah, so... On April the 15th, after less than an hour of deliberation, the jury found Richard Speck guilty and recommended the death penalty for each one of the murders. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, on June 5th, the judge sentenced him to die in the electric chair. But he granted him an immediate stay pending an automatic appeal. Then it turns out the Supreme Court upheld the convictions and the death sentence in November of 68. Now, in June of 1971, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld his conviction but reversed the death sentence because more than 250 potential jurors were unconstitutionally excluded from his jury because of their conscientious religious belief against capital punishment. The case was remanded back to Illinois Supreme Court for resentencing. When he got back November 1972, this is 4 years later, the judge resentenced him to from 400 to 1,200 years in prison, eight consecutive life sentences of 50 to 150 years. So, I mean, it was a wild ride. Then when he got in... when he got in prison, he just kind of let go because he said, you know, what are you going to do to me? I'm never getting out. And so, they made a video of him doing cocaine, drinking, passing money back and forth and having sex with other prisoners.
Was that the interview where they saw him sitting in his underwear?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, wow.
He also takes some female growth hormones.
Yes,
to,
he had boobs.
That's the simplest way to put it.
I remember that one.
It was a mess. It was just
a
mess.
He had some appendages he shouldn't have had.
Unbelievable.
Well, I guess... And I never thought about it, but if you know you're in jail forever, you'll never get out. Well, you know, you got two choices, either become a good person or just go crazy. So he went crazy. So it didn't matter. I mean, you know, there wasn't anything they could do to him. I mean, they weren't going to be able to kill him. And so he was just there being a troublemaker. And he died on his 49th birthday on December the 5th, which is on Krampus, International Krampus Day, which alluded to. So, all right, folks, what do you think? Now, our guests, and I think Amy in particular, has a story that revolves around her family and Richard Speck's activity. Is that correct, Amy?
Yes. Back in the 1990s, I was living with my grandmother. When I was younger, I wanted to be a crime scene photographer, so because I got hooked on serial killers. Well, I had brought home a movie that happened, or like a, I forget if it was a DVD, a VHS, or a book or something. I brought home something that had Richard Speck on it, and my grandma freaked out. And she told me to get it out of the house. And later on that night, after she cried for a while, I asked her why. According to my grandmother, she didn't tell me exactly who it was, so I don't know which one. But supposedly, according to my grandmother, one of the girls who was murdered was either a second or third cousin of hers. So we don't know which one. I've tried to Google it to figure out family members that might have familiar last names. But all I know is Richard Speck was banned from being talked in my house because of that. I'm not sure which one it is, but that's all my grandmother would say, was that one of her either second or third cousins was murdered by him.
Hmm.
Anytime something came up with him, she just burst into tears and left the room.
Wow.
I asked my father, and he refuses to talk about it either. So nobody in my family would discuss it. I just know that a distant relative of mine was one of the girls murdered. I don't know which one, though. But that's all I know.
Sad.
I remember... Yeah, it was sad watching my grandmother cry. So I don't know. It's kind of sad, but it's the only thing I ever had, and I always wondered if that's what they used to talk about when I was a little girl. There would be little whispers about somebody murdered, but nobody talked about who it was until my grandmother had told me that day. And I think a few months back, I'd asked my father, and he says he doesn't remember which girl it was. The only girl that I could find that has relatives that have similar names to what I've recognized in my family is Nina, but it's not 100% for sure if it was her or not.
Well, only time will tell.
Yeah.
I just remember she cried about it. Anytime anything came on about him, she cried.
Yeah, and I mean, the guy wasn't that, he wasn't even that old when he killed him.
No.
He was in his late 20s. So let's go around the room, as we always do with our panelists, and see what we think. I haven't heard much from Robin tonight. Robin, what are your thoughts? What are your feelings that you get about Richard Speck?
You know, it's really weird because, you know, usually they'll say different things or they'll come across and they'll say things to me. I feel such a massive amount of sadness and pain. It's overwhelming. Like, really, like, to the point where it just makes me want to shut down. I think that this is a person, and none of this is an excuse for what he did, but this is somebody that in his own little world there felt like he was a non-person. Okay, and he had a great deal of pain that he carried inside of him, and obviously he released it because look what he did. But it's almost like, you know, the drinking and the drugs. A lot of people that, not everybody, but a large portion of people that do that, it's because they're trying to cover up pain. And I think this guy was loaded with it from the time he was a very small child. And it carries through. But like I said, normally, even if I get that kind of feeling on it, I don't get the feeling of the incredible sadness and that I get with this one. And that is in no way an excuse for what he did. I mean, it was horrific. He caused pain everywhere he went. But he carried around just the most exorbitant amount of pain that I felt, I think, in any of the shows that we've done. You know, they were unhappy, these people were miserable or whatever, but I don't think it ever, the level of sadness in a person, this is, I think, the deepest one I felt.
Mm-hmm.
He was a deeply, deeply troubled person. And, you know, I think it's very, something that stuck out with me is when he talked to that one woman, she said he was a gentleman. You're not really a gentleman, but, you know, he was nice to her. I mean, he killed her, he did all these things to her, but when he talked to her, he's very polite, soft-spoken. You know, that's not somebody, this is so crazy, that is not somebody that's this heinous murderer going around doing all this stuff, yet that's what he did. But there was two sides to him, and it's really a weird feeling. It's not like the other ones that we've investigated at all. I think he was a lot deeper than people thought he was. I think he had mental issues, obviously. But I think he felt very alone. I'm not picking up that he felt like there was anybody in the world. You know, he didn't have, I don't know if this is true, but it feels like he didn't have a buddy, he didn't have a pal, he didn't have anybody, he had him. And he just lived in his own misery. And then this poor woman, this 65-year-old woman, he goes to and he talks to her, and he's nice. Before he killed and raped her, of course. But he was nice to her, and I think that's very telling because you don't see that a lot in any of the ones that we've investigated on this show. You see rage, you see hatred, you see anger. Not that he doesn't have those things in him, but there is just a huge, huge amount of pain. And it's almost like when it came to this Miss Harris, it's like he didn't want to do it, but that's what he was supposed to do, and he just did it. But he was kind to her beforehand, and I think that's a little odd. I mean, that's a lot different than some of the other ones we've looked at.
It is. I mean, that's very true. So, very good observation. Tony Forrest, what have you got from up here in Harlem, Tennessee? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, without doubt, Speck had a lot of issues.
I can hardly hear you, babe.
But Speck had a lot of issues, without a doubt. You know, from a young age, after his father died, he tried to get attention in school. He was in crayons. I think he was in, you know, second grade maybe, and he would act like a kindergartner. You know, eating crayons and doing silly stuff so the teacher would give him more attention. And then when his mother remarried, he was the polar opposite of his dad. You know, he drank a lot, and I think some of the references he made to Speck was, he discussed that he was nothing but a gutter rat. So he had a pretty messed up childhood. He resented his mother, I believe, you know, for remarrying a fellow after that she would allow to drink and things whenever his father was alive. There was an instance where she had really raked him over the coals for drinking a beer at a fish fry. And with Speck, I think women fell into two categories. You know, and later, in a few years after that, after his mother married the gentleman and he was getting in trouble, she would bail him out all the time. So she kind of redeemed himself in his eyes. But from that point on, you know, there were only two types of women. If they didn't measure up to what he thought his mother was, then they were just whores. And so Speck had a really screwed up sense of how to deal with the opposite sex. And I think as the rest of the series, the rest of the murderers here, he looked at them as objects because like Thomas Rowe made the observation. Basically, whenever he tied him up, he was setting him up an assembly line of murder. You know, he wasn't gonna let him any of them live. But the lady that ID'd him in the courtroom, she had just crawled under the bed and hid, and just by the grace of God, you know, he had found her. None of the other girls said had told she was there. Whenever that he first broke into the apartment, he sat and talked to him before he killed him. He had stolen a .22 pistol from someone either that day or a few days before, and so he had them all sitting in the floor, shooting them, just talking to them, telling him he was going to kill them. He changes and he crushes out a cigarette, and that's whenever he pulls out the knife and he cuts up one of the sheets and then ties the women up. So, and then interviews later about the murders, he wasn't repentant at all. I mean, he was like, yeah, I killed him, you know. And they say, well, you know, why didn't you shoot him? You had a gun. He says, knife's quieter. You know, and he's just real matter of fact about it. So, did Richard Speck having a bad childhood cause him to do this? Maybe had a part in it. But I think at the end of the day, that Richard Speck was had delusions of grandeur as far as being a criminal. You know, I think he thought he was going to go much further up the criminal chain, but he did make some statements early in life that he was going to do something. That there was an article in the paper about some murder or a trial or something, and he had made some statements. That's going to be me one day. So I just think that Richard Speck was an evil man that couldn't deal with reality, that took out his frustrations on 8 innocent girls that night. Like John said, I think he killed the barmaid too. You know, and maybe more.
That's right. We really don't know. And I think, and Tony, I think based on what you said, one could almost say that he was terribly schizophrenic.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He had definitely mental issues, in my opinion, but I'm no psychologist. But, and then see, Speck, the reason he took on the female persona in prison is he was afraid they would kill him for what he had done.
Mm-hmm.
So he became basically, I don't know what you would call him in prison, you know, just someone to be passed around. And he enhanced that with the female hormones, and I think Robinson, she'd watched the interview too, where this guy just looked at it and says, what are you wearing? You wearing the blue panties? He says, yeah, and he was shown to me. And Speck stands up and just strips down to his underwear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he did that you can look at Speck and tell he wasn't a physically imposing fellow. So I think that he did, you know, that was his defense mechanism or survival mechanism. So he wasn't very, in my opinion, he wasn't a brave man at all. I know he killed 8 people, but he just imposed his will. And I think he gets back to that. He was going to impose his will on somebody, and he was going to matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know. I just think that, like I said, at the end of the day, Richard Speck, he's a guy that couldn't deal with reality, and he made up his own reality. And then whenever it all came crashing down, started crumbling around him, and he snapped and murdered 8 defenseless nursing students.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, absolutely. All right. I'm gonna ask Papa Stroh for his opinion, and then we're going to talk to our guests and see what they think. Papa Stroh, what have you got to say in general about the whole Richard Speck thing, and what is your opinion?
This guy's a wreck right from the get-go. Man, I mean, he couldn't keep it together in school, and sounds like he couldn't keep it together in life. But you know what, though? He had the most uncanny luck as far as the judicial system and all the things that he did. Like you said, all the changes and the sentencing that he got gone through and all that. It was just crazy. It shows you how messed up the judicial system was when trying to prosecute the guy for all the atrocities that he did. This guy, I mean, he was, his train was definitely off the rails, so to speak, and it was just a matter of time before he finally got derailed, more or less. So it was just, you pretty much saw the writing on the wall with this guy.
All right. Well, thank you. I think you're 100% right.
Didn't they identify him? Did he try to kill himself before they arrested him? Is that how he got arrested? Was they took him to the hospital?
Yes, that is correct. He just couldn't stand it. And that is such a shame. It really is. Well, those are some interesting and good viewpoints. Now, Chaz and Amy, our guests, we again thank you for being here. Just what do y'all think, both of you? What do you think about Richard Speck? What do you think about all this? Amy, we got some from you, but I'm sure you've got some other comments about it.
Well,
when it comes down to it,
I do believe a lot of it had to do with his childhood. I'm not going to defend him either because what he did was wrong. But what a lot of people don't understand is I've been around a lot of shady people in my life. And I had an ex who was abusive, but it stemmed from his childhood. So sometimes what happens in your childhood does affect. Now, I've read about Richard Speck a lot since I was little, and I've even read stuff where he had appendicitis. And the nurse that spent time with him said that he was gentle and quiet. I mean, what he did was wrong, but sometimes it may take something that triggers, and with the alcohol, the drugs, and everything else, plus the fact of his childhood and everything, we don't know entirely what went on with him because it's never really been totally examined completely. But I do think a lot of what he did had to do with his childhood, and just something happened to where he snapped, regardless of it being the alcohol and the drugs. I've seen it before with other people, just not to get the point of murder. My daughter has problems herself, so she has a tendency to snap, I had to get her help. So I do think a lot of it has to do with mental issues, childhood, and I don't think he could handle life himself.
No, I don't think so either.
I just think life was just too much for him, and he snapped, and it's just weird how people say that he was gentle and quiet, but then he murdered all these women.
Exactly. He was just like one of the saddest people I've ever felt. I mean, it's bizarre.
Yeah, with me, it's like I knew it was a family member, a distant family member that was murdered. But in a way, I also wonder, a lot of my thing with this is why did he do it? What were the causes? And was there something that could have been found out sooner on?
It's almost like, to me, he reminds me of somebody with multiple personalities.
Yes.
And if you look into a lot of psychiatric readings, you will see that people that have a really bad life as a child, I think there was a lot of physical abuse in his life. I think he was neglected. He was, youngest of several children. And I think they tend to retreat into their psyche to the point where they get these multiple personalities because they can't deal with the life they have. But it's almost like while they're have these other personalities acting. They're aware of it, but they can't do anything about it.
Yes.
And I mean, I pick up a lot of that with him.
Well,
I get it too.
Well, again, I've agreed with what everyone else has said tonight. Taz, do you have anything you'd like to weigh in on?
You know, just in listening to his story again and listening to everybody's comments, I mean, it's not hard to see that he would regress that quickly. I mean, let's be honest. He was born in the serial killer's paradise. Illinois, and especially the Chicago area, boasts more serial killers in the history of the United States than any other place in the country. So is there something to be said for a supernatural force that would breed serial killers? Possibly. But, you know, he was also an opportunist. You know, most sexual sadists are opportunists. He got his enjoyment in, why did he rape before killing? Because he got his enjoyment in the torture. He got his enjoyment in listening to the torment of his victims. And then rather than become a victim himself in prison, he became a submissive.
And probably,
you know, but
one that a lot of the guys wouldn't want.
But, you know, had it been me, had I been the judge, I would have shot so many bolts into him, he would have lit up a small town.
And that makes you seem really good guy.
But he says a guy like that, you know, he's a... When you get to the prison stage, and he's flaunting the prison rules and just saying, you know, I'm here for 1,000 years, what are you going to do to me? Then you start losing
really
sympathy for the guy. You know, that's when you start losing sympathy for the guy. Now, it doesn't make you right or make you feel good then to watch him suffer, but at some point you got to ask yourself, you know, why are we spending tax dollars and municipal funds to keep this guy alive?
And luckily, he would have probably appreciated being put to rest. Because, I mean, he was in the most no-win situation a person could be in when he got to jail, a tall, skinny kid that could just be taken advantage of by all those guys, and with what he did. I mean, he lived in hell for about 20 years.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go one further. I'm going to say he lived in hell from the day he was born. Because the family life he had, and, you know, you had a mother on one end of the extreme and a father on the other, and you had seven other siblings that were in the same boat as him. You know, he saw it happen to all of them. He was doomed from the start.
I tell you what, the pain that he felt emotionally is overwhelming.
Yes.
And I'm, like I said again, I'm not condoning anything he did, but that's what I'm picking up.
Now, with the prison thing, the only thing I have to say that differs from what Chaz says is I don't think it was so much that he took advantage of the system, but I've noticed that a lot of people, when put into either a mental institution type place or a prison, they find it more comforting because it's a controlled atmosphere. And they like that. My sister got put into a hospital for kids that had problems. She didn't want to come home. She liked the controlled atmosphere. She felt more at home there. My ex, he goes in and out of prison. He's happy when he's in prison. When he's out, he's miserable. I think sometimes with the people, they get comfortable in that controlled atmosphere.
That is a very good point, Amy. It really is. I mean, some people do like that control. I mean, like you hear a lot of people that have been in prison, and then they'll say, well, I got out, and I just went ahead and committed another crime so I could get back in jail.
Yeah,
I'm familiar with it. I'm happy with it. Wow. Well, it's hard to know what to say, but you have been through it. And you understand that for some people that is better. It really is. So
my sister was like that when she went into the one, it was called Woodland Hospital. She got home for a weekend. She packed a bag not even 5 minutes after getting home and said, okay, I'm ready to go back. When I asked her years later why, she said, I liked the way they were. Everything was controlled. He might have actually enjoyed that in prison.
Well, that makes sense. You know, people,
maybe he didn't feel as alone
different.
There. He had people that already had problems like he had that were there
mm-hmm.
for various crimes. I mean, he was kind of with his people, and he may not
yeah.
have felt alone there.
You know,
yeah.
One thing that just struck me is that maybe he portrayed himself as the female type to compensate for a lack of affection from the father, obviously, but also to portray himself as the mother he wanted.
Well, it's possible.
That's another point. You know, there are a lot of things we don't know, and I wish our group could talk to the some of these criminals before they get in. I think we could help figure out a lot of things. Probably
mm-hmm.
because none of us have a degree in psychology. There are questions that we would tend to ask that folks with a degree would not ask. You know, it's funny when you think about that. When you think about degrees and not degrees, if you look at because I do the Charlotte line, the other week I was just we were talking about some of the racers that had done very well in the previous week's couple of races, and I went and looked at their profiles just to see their background. I don't think a single one of them, most of them graduated from high school,
mm-hmm.
and even if they didn't, they're out there making millions of dollars. With a
mm-hmm.
high school degree or less, and you know, it's just interesting. Sometimes too much education can be problematic. Let's put it that way. I think a smart person that does research can probably learn a lot. And I don't know, just something that I believe. I don't think you have to have all that. And here I am with three masters and a doctorate. And I'm saying this, but it's the truth. I can learn enough about anything, go online, spend a couple of days, and be a little better than an armchair expert, just because I know how to. So it's just, I think that's just the way the world is. And I think people like us that are smart and have different talents, we could ferret out some of these things and help folks. But I don't know that will happen. Not today. I mean, right now we're having a problem trying to keep a police department in Minneapolis, much less, who knows. It's just, it's very difficult.
It's a topic for another show, Dr. John.
We might have to wait just a little while on that one, because I think we're still... You know, we've probably got another round of coronavirus and more contention on this. So we might have to take a, how can I put it? We might have to take a look back when all this kind of blows over, hopefully by the middle of next year. But who knows? Nobody
yeah.
knows what's going on. And,
you know, my thought is once the national election's over, all will be made clear.
Now what? Once the national election is over, then what?
I said once the national election is over, all is going to be made clear again.
We hope. I hope everybody will calm down.
Stroll will attest to this. When you write a storyline, your blow-off is always your biggest match. And it's our contention in the election.
Yes.
The blow-off is going to be the election.
that'll be in the pyramid, right?
Oh, yes, sir. As Dusty would say, what are we going to do, baby? We got to do this with the book. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, enough with the wrestling.
No, there's never enough wrestling.
I'm sorry. I'm
never
sorry.
Enough wrestling.
Yeah, me and him and our bickering. You'll get used to it. We bicker over everything. Stro knows how we are. We argue over everything. We're not happy if we're arguing. We're happy.
Oh, it's great. It's great.
Oh my goodness.
Love it.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, I think we've gotten a pretty good profile on the one and only Richard Speck. We talked about a lot of the great things going on here at Murder 123 and Scary Cats Network and what we've got coming up. And we know that it's now time for all of our guests to do a plug of what they've got going on, what they think, what they feel. And as we put another Murder 123 into the books, so who would like to do the plug first? Who would like to go first?
Just pick one.
Well, I'm going to go first if nobody else wants to. I'll do it.
All right, Chaz, you go first.
Well, I would like to plug all of the great folks at the BOC Nation for the wonderful podcast that they put on and the fact that they allow those of us who are either in the business or, as we all started out, fans of the business to call in, to be a part of a panel, and to just have a good time talking about subjects that we enjoy. And, you know, I enjoyed tonight. I enjoyed being on the show more so as an observer than as a participant because it's subjects that I'm not very familiar with, but you learn a lot.
I certainly see that point, and I agree. And I got to say one thing to follow up with you on a part of my plug is that I never knew what a podcast was until my new friend Papa Stro said, "You've got a good radio voice. You ought to do a podcast." It was 5 years ago, Papa Stro. Look where
yeah.
we are now. And I can't think. And then the guy that gave me a shot to get on a network, Brady Hicks, is going to be our guest on ScaryCast this coming Thursday night. And it's just all going back around, and it's wonderful. Yes, I guess a lot of good things have happened because of wrestling. And now, Miss Amy, don't get too mad about that. But you know, wrestling has brought a lot of us together. And we got a lot of people to thank for everything. But yeah, Kaz, I like what you said. I really do. And so, who else wants to go next? Would Amy like to promote anything or say something to us as we go back around the table?
Well, first off, I'd like to say thank you for having me on the show. This is actually my first podcast I've ever been on, other than making snotty comments toward my husband on Stroh.
nice.
Yeah, my once in a while snotty comments or snoring in the background. Yeah, I was the one snoring the one time. It's really great to talk to people who actually, growing up my whole childhood, I was told that I was weird, I was odd, and I was creepy because I always was reading on serial killers and stuff. So it's nice to have people I can talk to that are into the same thing. I've been told it my whole life that, you know, that's scary. You need to get help. You shouldn't be reading that kind of stuff. So I thank you guys for having me on. It's actually been really enlightening. And then hopefully this whole corona thing disappears. And then maybe one day I'll get my daughter on, who likes to write scary stories herself and is kind of interested in the serial killer stuff. But right now we're in the middle of a custody battle over for her. So once she comes around, you guys will get to have her on the show too.
Awesome.
Yes. She'll
great.
Be 17 in September, but right now we're in a custody battle with the state of Alabama for her. So once that happens... So, Well, but
I
other than
the
that,
best of luck.
Yeah, thank you. We're going to need it. When it comes down, from what I hear, when it comes down to foster care fights, it's really hard to win against foster care. Her dad took off with her. We've been trying to get her back for years. She's going to be 17, but she's in foster care because she passed away last year. So they took her, and now we got to fight them. So hopefully we'll get her back. Hopefully we'll get her back soon.
Yeah, we have a flawed system.
And then she'll be on the show, too. She loves it. She was all excited when we talked about it. I told her about the show, so she's interested in all that also. So that'll be nice to have a younger person's perspective.
Yeah, it will.
Yes, but thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, I'm so glad you were here.
I enjoyed it. It's really a great show.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
I can hardly hear anybody. All I'm getting is static.
It was the quiet moment.
Yes. Yeah, all I can get is static.
In perspective.
Yes.
All righty. Well, Robin, what have you got for us?
Well, I'm not going to plug a particular thing. I just want to say, you know, these are really bad times right now. And the evil and the hatred are at an all-time high. And we really just need to take a moment and process this because, you know, one thing that was done wrong has now taken and let everybody run amok with our country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like it was a tragedy what happened, and I hope and I pray that justice is served for the poor man that was killed because he deserves it. He's a human being. Human beings shouldn't be rated by color.
Mm-hmm.
But then you take a look at the evil that has transpired because of that, and it's heartbreaking. It really and truly is heartbreaking. And I just encourage people, think. You know, use the brain that God gave you. You know, two wrongs don't make a right. And now so many people are in danger. Because people are taking the situation that happened, and the family has come forward and said, please stop. George would have never wanted this to happen. You know, this is not something that he would have wanted anybody to do. But they've taken that situation, and instead of paying respect for this poor man that was killed tragically, they've turned it into themselves. They become the me crowds. Look at me. I'm going to go loot this place. I'm going to rob this place. I'm going to do this. But yet they say it's all in the name of protesting for him. I am in full support of protesting, but do it the right way. Innocent people are being hurt. People are losing livelihoods. They're losing their income. They're losing their personal belongings. It's out of control. And I just think people need to take some time and think about what you're doing because it's making the country worse instead of better.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
I mean,
yes.
It's like the guy obviously was a crooked cop. I mean, obviously, that is without question. But I have people that I know that are near and dear to me that have been police officers their entire life. They have sacrificed. They have upheld the law. And their integrity is above reproach. And there are a lot of really good police officers out there. And it saddens me to think because of someone that did such a completely abuse of power. The man is vile. There's nothing else you can say about it. And now everybody's going against police officers. You know what? There's a lot of them that are good that have sacrificed their lives every day for us. And then you have people that are innocent bystanders trying to wrap their head around what would happen. And now they've got to worry about their lives being lost with the looting and the craziness going on. All that's doing is making those people are not any better than the cop that killed George.
Mm-hmm.
They're not,
agreed.
Because they're
agreed.
Taking lives. They're taking, they're damaging things. They're not standing up for him. And the fact that they say that they are for him, to me, makes me sick. They're not.
Well,
they're
I
doing
saw,
the me, and grandstanding.
Yeah. I saw one of the many videos that have been popping up all over the place with looting going on, especially looting in Chicago. you know, they were looting less than a mile from where we live. And, you know, I'm looking at it and I'm thinking to myself, what possible purpose does robbing a jewelry store or raiding
exactly
have to do with any type of movement?
Exactly. That's my point. They're taking a tragedy that happened, and instead of trying to be supportive in a nurturing way for this family, I am all for protest. You can protest.
Mm-hmm.
We need to stand up for what we believe in, but there should be a way to do it without what's being done now. They're bringing our country to its knees. They're blaming it on this poor man that lost his life through no fault of his own. And they're calling, well, we're doing it to protest for him. His family didn't want this. They already said he would have never wanted
mm-hmm.
this. These are people
right.
that are looking for an excuse. They were looking for an excuse before that man was killed. They're going to always be looking for excuse for the
yes.
bad behavior. Now,
amen to that.
People to put things into perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Destroying the country and the people around you makes you no better than the animal that took that man's life.
Yes.
Amen to that.
Amen.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that video. That was heartbreaking.
Oh, my God. I couldn't get through it. I was devastated.
I watched the whole thing, and I cried through the whole thing. I cried.
I guess so. Instead of plugging something, I am just asking people to look within yourself for the love of God. Don't breed the hate. The hate is what started this. Protest, yes. Stand up for what's right. Absolutely. Don't ever stop caring enough to fight for it. But do it the right way, for the love of God. Don't turn yourself into the damn animal that already started this.
Exactly.
Thank you.
It's like they went after everybody else but the people they should have been going after. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And this hating, and I'll tell you something else. Hating on law enforcement to me is ridiculous. Now, I don't think you have, just because somebody says I'm a police officer, that doesn't mean they get respect. Respect is earned, not given. And I say that to my kids from the time they were born. But you know what? There are a lot of officers out there that put their lives on the line every time they wake up in the morning. And not just do they,
mm-hmm.
their families do. Their friends do, because they never know when someone they love and care about isn't coming back. What about these children whose dads are in law enforcement and get gunned down in the act of duty trying to protect all of us? And this is how we repay them? Now,
dads, moms,
That
right.
guy was a complete abuse of power, and he should be prosecuted. I don't care. There's not anything they can do to him that will justify what he has done. But
mm-hmm.
you don't blame everybody else on it, because there's too many good ones out there that keep us safe on a daily basis. And I think we need to be aware of that, and I think we need to thank God that we have them. Protest the hell out of things, but don't do it at the expense of other people. Because if you can't make your point without the expense of other people, then you have a very large problem, and you are part of the problem.
Thank you.
And I just,
okay.
you know, I implore people, use common sense, use your brain. Our country is going down the toilet because of hate. So why in the name of the heavens are you out there breeding more hate? You know,
mm-hmm.
I just, it makes me sick. I was out, I live in South Carolina, and we had the looting and the break-ins and stuff out here, but not to the extreme of, like, per se California did. But I had went into town just to get takeout food for dinner, and I was in the car. I had my friend Jan Carter was with me. Her daughter was with us, and a very dear friend of mine from Alaska was here visiting. And as we were coming home, there's a gas station like 6 miles from my house.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm out in the country. I'm not in downtown. I'm out in the country. And I heard a big boom. You go by, and here's a fire truck closing down a van. Somebody put a pipe bomb in a police officer's private vehicle.
Oh.
When he went to the gas station, it went off while he was parked next to the pump.
Ooh.
Fortunately, he had gone in to pay for it. But you know what? That officer isn't the one that did that to that man. He had nothing to do with it. He's been a law-abiding citizen. He's taken care and protected people. His family
mm-hmm.
has sacrificed. He sacrificed. He had not a damn thing to do with what happened to George. And he could have lost his life for nothing. Not
mm-hmm.
only would his family be without him, he's lost his chance at any type of a life. And what about all the people that he protected? There's no way anybody will justify to me that that was worth it. Not one way. And like I said, I am all for protesting. Stand up. Make your voice
heard. That's part of our problem. We live in a world where we keep our head in the sand and we don't do a damn thing that we should. But you know what? If you're going to make your voice heard, make it done the right way so you're heard. Nothing is being mm-hmm. heard right now because it's all being covered up by all the hate. So they're not gaining anything.
Agreed.
So anyway, that was my soapbox for the night.
That's okay, Robin.
I still say ban the news.
Go, Robin.
I blame the news for all of this because the news only shows the stuff that they know is going to rile people up.
Yeah, we you know, there is some reputable media companies, but the thing of it is when they go to do it, the whole reason they're in business is what sells.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think there needs to be regulations on it. I know some media companies that are very upstanding, and I applaud them in the way they conduct themselves. And I'm serious. I do, because they're not all like that. But you get some of these ones, they don't care who they hurt. They're out for a story.
I'm agreeing with you, the fact that, you know, some of these news stations need to stop reading from the same script, because if you put all the news channels on at the same time, they're literally saying the same thing.
mm-hmm.
Either that or you get the news opposite and they're all different, and it's like, okay, let me spin the roulette wheel so I know who's
get
being truthful today.
Everybody.
Yes, the news is forbidden from being played in our house right now. I've banned it from our house.
I can't watch it because there's nothing in it that's true, and because I do get premonitions, because I am an empath, I watch the news and I can't. It's like, no, because you're all a lying sack of crap.
I can't do it anymore. I have the depression and the anxiety, and with me, it's just, I'll start crying at the drop of a hat, just seeing one little sad story, and it's like, okay, no. And then you find out that it was twisted around and all this. So I told the husband, no news allowed in this house at all. We have one guy we follow. He does this ghetto news network on Facebook. He'll report there were 21 shootings, but yet the news will say, oh, there were no shootings. And it's like, wait a second, he's got a scanner. He's listening to it. But yet you're saying that there's none. Well, which is it? But, yeah, no news allowed in our house.
Good.
I'm going to have to check that out for sure.
It'd be a much happier place. If the news was shut off, I bet everybody would be like, oh, hey, how's it going?
The old 30 minutes worth of news at 6 p.m., the way it used to be, might not be such a bad idea, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And then they have to figure out what's the most important thing to tell. So not all that junk gets told. But anyway, well, look, Robin, that's a great. You were not on a soapbox. You were telling things that I believe the entire mm-hmm. crew here will agree with you. So thank you very
absolutely.
Much. Always
yes.
great to have you.
Thanks, guys.
next from the world capital, the universal capital of murder, Mr. Tony Pelosi. What do you have to say to us?
I agree with Robin. There's a lot of underlying things that's going on. You have looters, protesters, and then you have the rioters. I think they're two different factions.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. You got underlying things they're trying to accomplish. You know, and they're too organized. They're showing up here in Harlem. I mean, we had it was a peaceful protest, but we had a protest here in Little Harlem County last week. You had one in some of the adjoining towns. I don't think it's 100% for George. I think that the officers should be, all of them should be punished. The ones that stood by and watched him kill him should be punished to the fullest extent of the law also.
Mm-hmm.
But there's underlying things that they're trying to accomplish. With the riots, they're trying to, you know, you're trying to defund the police, you're trying to do this crazy stuff, that crazy stuff, and they start out with Confederate statues, then they're working their way up. I think they took a Texas Ranger statue down, and it's about destroying
yep.
history. You know, if you don't know history, if you don't know and understand history, you're doomed to repeat it. And if you look at how Stalin did, and anybody else like Hitler and all of them, they had to come in, and this is definitely a subversive element. It's much deeper than what people think, and they're using the death of an unfortunate man and protesters that just want justice to further their nefarious agenda. In my opinion,
I agree.
So, on a lighter note,
I agree too.
The Manzo Shepherd book is done.
It's wonderful.
Yes, it's finally done.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It should be on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and several other places here in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So we have that project behind us. It's not a very big book, but we didn't want to add several stories and take away from Manzo. It'll probably be part two, the paranormal part of Manzo coming out in the next year sometime.
Cool.
That's great.
Okay, that's great. And congratulations. I know how it feels. Well, I don't know how it feels. I'm still working on Lizard Man Companion. I've got some of the most amazing things. It will shock and amaze you when you see what is coming out. It's like I came dead end, Tony, and you know this. You come to a dead end, and all of a sudden, the door opens, and you get things that you won't believe. If I told you what, well, everybody can listen to me talk at the Lizard Man Festival this weekend, and I'm going to let some of this, I got to let some of this cat out of the bag. I mean, I really do. So, but anyway, yeah, Tony, congratulations. When it is getting ready to be released on Amazon, would you please let me know, and whatever podcast we got going on that day, we will preempt it to let you talk about Manzo. Is that all right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, sure. That's great. Yeah, I appreciate it. It should be out in the next, it takes a while for it to filter through, but I have hard copies should be here this week, and then it should be up on Amazon and Barnes and Noble in the next 3 to 5 weeks.
Cool.
That is great.
That's wonderful.
That is great.
Awesome.
I will send. I want to get your PayPal, and I want to send off for a copy to you. Exactly what I'm going to do. But anyway, thank you and congratulations. And always, as always, thank you for doing the King of Research and doing research on our Murder 123 topics and Scary Cast. So we appreciate you, Tony, very much. And Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling, what have you got for us?
In the room. On the Destination podcast tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And prior to that, actually, check out Shelly Martinez podcast at 6 p.m., I believe, tomorrow night on TheDestination.com. Also, WCW Retro this Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on TheDestination.com. Scary Cast immediately following WCW Retro for sure. And then the Lizard Man Festival this weekend, this Friday night, midnight, the Stro Zone, featuring the giant Gila Monster. And then Saturday, the Lizard Man Festival, I'll be one of the guest speakers at 12 noon Eastern
Standard
Time.
You'll be kicking it out.
So, can't wait to rock it out, Lizard Man Festival this weekend.
Boy, do we have on Saturday, on Friday, we've got the Bigfoot contingency and the Lizard Man contingency. On Saturday, we've got Papa Stro and the Hardcore Paranormal. We got Shane Aulis is going to take Spirit Box. He's going to be out in a cemetery and trying to talk to spirits. So be sure to watch. Be sure to listen. That'll be coming on Saturday afternoon. Dylan will be talking about the Lizard People of Los Angeles, Karak. My buddy who has a large, I can't think of the name of it. He's got a huge following on Facebook. He's going to be talking about some through the Lisbon. Well, Papa Stro will be taking your questions, Q&As. So thanks. Be good to everybody. And so anyway, this is Dr. John. It's been a lot of fun. This has been an unusually entertaining and fun show because we have unusually entertaining and fun hosts and guests. So we'll do it again next week, and we'll let you know who it's going to be. I'll post that on the webpage, and we're going to have a great time. I've got to do a call around to all of the co-hosts because I've got a tough week this week, and I want to check in with everybody, and then I got to get going. So anyway, thanks a lot, everybody. We'll see you next week. Next time I will
take
see
care,
you
everybody.
Guys will be
yes. Thank
Gary
you.
Cass,
goodbye,
all of us together
to
again.
To you.
All right, you guys, take care. Be good. Cheers.
Take care. Bye.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Night.